On this week's 51%, a stage 4 pancreatic cancer survivor coaches other cancer patients, and when the pandemic hit, these women continued their dance party virtually.
Then we weren't sure what to do, and we were really stressed with what was going on with COVID-19, so we started an online dance party.
I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%. Dr. Sharon Ufberg returns with her 51% segment, Force of Nature. This time, she interviews Marissa Harris, who years ago received a devastating diagnosis of stage 4 pancreatic cancer. Harris tapped the power within herself, as well as chemotherapy, to become a long-term survivor. Now she's committed to motivating and supporting individuals in finding and using their power to heal their bodies, minds, and souls. Over the last 15 years, she has focused on helping thousands of cancer patients to flourish and succeed during adversity.
I really want to share my story in the context that we're living right now in a world that's filled with uncertainty. And within this global challenge, you know, just to remind ourselves that there are always individual challenges. So as I prepared for this call, I realized that my story for me was an invitation, and I think it's for all of us, is how do we keep moving forward without knowing what's ahead? And you know, another question is how do we find that faith and that courage to keep moving forward when there's such uncertainty as there is right now and there was back then when I was diagnosed, within the suffering and, you know, the very possibility of death. And I think the most important question is, are there practices that can help us find, you know, joy, meaning, significance, hopefully even some solutions when we don't have that guaranteed desired outcome? So now I'll just tell you a shortened version of my story. It was 20 years ago, April 21st, in fact, 1998, that I was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. I was told by this leading oncologist that there was absolutely nothing that could be done, that I was medically untreatable, medically incurable, and at best, maybe I had 9 months to live, more likely 4 or 6. And that moment of shock and disbelief, I had this feeling that I was sort of like locked into this prison and given a death sentence. And I really believed that there was nothing that could be done. And a few weeks later, this woman came into my life. She had heard about my story, and she tells me about her Uncle Louis, who had been diagnosed 10 years earlier with stage 4 lung cancer, given at best 2 months to live. And 10 years later, she says, Marissa, he's still alive, and he's living a full and happy life. And in that moment, you know, looking back, I realized that I was living, it seemed, in utter darkness. And it was like the sun came out. And that Uncle Louis story, that story of inspiration, just brought forth this determination inside of me, well, that I was going to be an Uncle Louis. And I decided that I was going to like cut away all the darkness. And this is so important today because there's so much darkness around us. To stop looking and hearing and associating with anyone and everyone who brings up more negativity and more despair. And instead, I was going to try to my best to bring in more positivity and possibility, to find within this the love and the healing. And I took this decision and I wrapped it up into some actions. And, you know, just I'm going to give you an example. So I fired those doctors who absolutely said that I'm going to die. And I found this brilliant you know, well-trained oncologists who not only believed that there was a possibility of my getting well again, but I think even more, he was enthusiastic in helping me get better. And then I knew that I needed to be inspired, you know, almost like every day, and that I was going to find more Uncle Louie stories. And to my surprise, there were hundreds of stories. I mean, this was in 1998 when there wasn't, you know, so much about complementary healing, you know, going on. And what these studies were most revealing is that not only were people living longer, some of them, not all of them, but some of them absolutely were, and some are even getting better. But each of these studies seemed to emphasize a different practice, a different way of doing and thinking that could contribute to a longer life and definitely to a better life. And this became the foundation, sort of my curriculum, I'm going to call it that, my curriculum for doing what I could do, not only to get better, but to start feeling better right at that moment. And what I didn't realize was, like, the worst challenge that I think, the worst thing that could ever happen to me, it just blossomed into a cancer coaching career. And also more happiness in every area of my life.
So, Marissa, based on your own experiences, I know you then began to coach and help other people. Can you share what that looks like? Like, what do you do? Like, how do you help someone who's gotten a diagnosis like you had understand the things that you now understand?
Oh, it's a great question and a really important one, because my coaching is based on a particular way of looking at life and looking at healing. And so people come to me, Sharon, and they say, oh, I want to be just like you. I want you to produce that miracle for me. And I become more and more careful in saying there are no guarantees. Nobody knows how long that we're going to live. From my research, from my experience, there are ways it seems that can extend life. But what my coaching process can do, that here is, I almost feel like I can guarantee that if you apply not all these practices and skills, but even some of them, that this can be the happiest time of your life. I think for me, it's almost like it was a shock that after 2 months into this experience, I realized one day, I was actually getting a pedicure at the time, that if my fairy godmother had come to me and said, you know what, we'll take this pancreatic cancer away, but you have to go back to the life you had before, which was a good life, my first response would be no. I don't want to go back. That through the practices that I was doing, that I had never been happier. I had never felt freer. And this was even before medical things were changing. So this is a very important sort of stage that I set for what will take place. And within this, there was absolutely a structure. And so one of the first things we look at is that this is an environment, an opportunity for you as a cancer patient or as the primary caregiver to come in and bring with you everything and anything that you are feeling and experience. Everything is acceptable here. Everything is open. And, you know, I sort of call it, this is your honest place. This is where there's no pretending. And why is this so important? Is because when something challenging is happening to us, we tend to bottle up. We're afraid that people don't want to hear it, that will scare them. So creating that open space is the beginning of healing. And then we turn to more specific things. We create a vision. Because people so quickly get into, well, that's not possible. How am I going to do that? We put that aside and we just concentrate on what we would love. And then we take a look, you know, we do an examination, a complete life examination. So what are the things that you're doing now that are supporting your highest priorities, that's supporting of you not only getting well, but living an authentic life that comes from your passion, from what you desire most?
Marissa, I want to ask you a question about some of the things that I know I've read and we've talked about regarding this notion of resilience, because I know it's one of the skills that you feel is very important. And I'm wondering, you know, for people who really are in probably one of the worst moments of their life, they're facing this major challenge, and how does this notion of resilience feed into their sense of well-being or have them navigate in a more empowered way? I know it's something that you have talked about that is so important.
Yes, and you're absolutely right, Sharon. There's almost nothing that's more critical when you're facing a major challenge or turmoil, you know, in your life. And so it's so important today, whether or not you have a diagnosis of cancer. But, you know, just people don't really even know what resilience is. So just to know, first of all, that it's not one thing. It's made up of many, many abilities, and that these abilities help us deal with high levels of challenge, whether it's a diagnosis of pancreatic cancer or, you know, you lose your job and you have no money. And so when we grow these resilience, and I say grow these resilience characteristics because everybody has them to some degree or they couldn't be alive, that then we're able to more easily, you know, regain in the face of a challenge and a shock a level of effectiveness, a level of productivity, a level of confidence that they can draw in. And I'd love to, you know, in the short time we have, to give you an example of just a few of many, many of those resilient characteristics. And one of the fundamental ones is the resilience quality of positivity. And what that means is that we're able to reframe the challenge, the danger, into a new reality by seeing that there are within this challenge opportunities. And if we can't see the opportunity, people who are resilient are able to create opportunities. And what this does, so people who are weak in positivity, they tend to run away. They tend to feel victimized by it. They don't take action in it. So it usually gets worse. But if you're resilient in positivity, then you actually go into the challenge. And I'll give you just a brief example. So there was within the diagnosis of cancer, I learned that I was going to lose all my hair. And this was a major challenge for me, as it is for many, especially the women that I work for. And so my way of reframing it, you know, the first way I saw the opportunity, I mean, it's kind of a joke, but I said, well, okay, for this period of time, I'm not going to have another bad hair day, you know. And that laughter with me, that it just began to give me more energy. Also, you know, for me to see that I grew up in a family where physical appearance for girls and women was so important, and that this was an opportunity I decided to focus more on my inner beauty than my outer beauty. So, you know, when positivity is absolutely something that we always want to continue building on, because it is the energy booster when we are facing a challenge. And one of the best ways to do it, or to start with, is to just look within this challenge. What can I be grateful for? Where is there something good or the possibility of good with it?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, Marissa, just for one more piece of advice, and that would be, you know, in this moment in time when people are facing a global challenge, what advice do you give to those people who, in addition, are facing a serious personal challenge? How do you help them stay grounded? How do you tell them to move forward? What would be your one piece of advice you would give them to start?
To reach out, to use the resilience muscle or the resilience characteristic of connection, to reach out to people who love and support you, who will first of all just listen to you, listen to your fears, your concerns, your confusions. Just be that soft place for them to just share what is going on, you know, with them. The other thing to do is to reach out to people who are experts in this area. You know, so if it's in the midst of a diagnosis of cancer, and we're going through this virus, which makes going for appointments and all kinds much more difficult, and then the challenges is to reach out to people who are healing professionals who understand both the physical problems, but also the mental and emotional, and even spiritual problems.
Great advice. I so appreciate that, to reach out and get support from people, loved ones, and also from experts. Speaking of reaching out, Marissa, how can someone find you? How is the best way to see the work that you do, to find you, to potentially be in touch with you?
To learn more about me, in fact, I just did 3 consecutive webinars on resilience. Just go to my website, www.marissaharris.com. Marissa Harris is MarissaHarris. And I would love to stay in touch. You know, if you have a question and you want to just talk about more about the challenge you're facing, just email me at marissaharris@aol.com, and I would be happy to offer you, you know, a complimentary 30-minute session where we can go deeper into how you can deal in the most effective way with the challenges you are currently going through.
Thank you so much. It's Marissa Harris, and this is Dr. Sharon Ufberg on Force of Nature for 51%.
Dr. Sharon Ufberg is co-founder of the personal development wellness company Borrowed Wisdom in California. DJ Shannon Blowtorch and host Minneapolis Sedonia have years of experience working the crowds and pumping up the energy in the room. Keeping their love for entertainment alive during COVID-19, every week they present Quarantine Live Online Dance Party. The music and dance event streams live on multiple platforms. KFAI's Dixie Trichel produced this piece.
DJ Shannon Blowtorch and Minneapolis Sedonia. I want to know how y'all are doing out there. How you feeling? Going through this quarantine. Y'all say quarantine. Here we go. Hey.
We throw parties normally, and we felt really sad, and we weren't sure what to do, and we were really stressed with what was going on with COVID-19. So we started an online dance party. Quarantine Live Online Dance Party. We live stream and we play music of all sorts. Sometimes we do themes, and then I host and we interact with everyone that comes out to the dance parties. My name is Adonia Kyle. I go by Minneapolis Adonia. I am a event host, drag performer, entertainer and dancer, and I'm also a Prince impersonator.
My name is Shannon Blowtorch. I am a DJ, promoter, sound engineer, and an overall nerd. Well, we've tried different platforms, and this is new territory for everyone. We've been using Zoom. For me as a DJ, it was really nice to see and interact with people and be able to physically see somebody and their movements and the reactions to whatever you're playing. That's definitely something that's missing versus doing a live show compared to doing things online and not sharing the same space with people. So that's definitely helped me, and it feeds me energy as a DJ to play to the crowd.
Here you go, the dance. Here we go.
As Adonia is hosting, though, we both kind of read the chats, and Adonia will interact on the microphone with someone in their comment in the chat. The best place to access it on Tuesdays is www.quarantinempls.com. And there will be a Zoom link there, so literally all you have to do is click it. Another platform we use is Twitch, and we can interact with people in the chat room there. So it's all happening in real time.
How y'all feeling out there? This song doesn't get enough love. How you doing, baby?
I live a lot of my life on the internet, so people already know that I'm going to create content. People follow the both of us for the silly videos we make together. So that really helps us have an audience and have a base already, along with the people that come to our parties. So they're looking for people that they follow to make that content.
We promote it by throwing posters out there. We usually do it week by week, throwing promo out there. If people who come to last week's party had such a good time that they become devoted followers and come to every party. You're kind of building from the ground up again, as any promoters or entertainers are right now. Last week, we had someone from a hospital joining in on our Zoom party. Adonia started shouting them out and thanking them. And at the end, they were just dancing their butt off. I don't know if it was in like an X-ray room or what kind of room they were in. That was a powerful interaction. And just to see this person for a moment at their job in the hospital, just getting something out that they need to get out and just dance hard. It was a beautiful sight. People being really gracious online and being like, I really needed this. Thank you so much.
Do what you want to. Do it, everyone. Do what you want to.
Not only are we a business partnership, but we're a married queer couple. We fell into the entertainment industry and found out that what we love about it is that we love to bring people joy. That's why we do what we do, and making a living off of it is second. And when people are responding, they're saying, oh my gosh, this was great. I had such a wonderful time. I got a workout in. I've been on my couch all the time. I got a stretch in. And feels like we are bringing some love and joy and light into the world, which is why we both started doing what we do in the first place.
Are we ready? Let's go! Don't show up.
Because we're both busy interacting with people. I'm DJing, she's hosting. So I have somebody in New York monitoring the chats so that if somebody comes in and starts saying some stuff that is not appropriate or like does anything, that they get immediately booted out of there.
We don't let trolls control our comments. And sometimes, you know, you got to come in with a hammer of justice and deal with those trolls. It is nice to be able to make our corner of the internet safe as we can.
All right, y'all. We coming down to the last couple of minutes of this. And DJ Shannon Blowtorch has kept you rocking all night. I am Minneapolis Adonia, your consensual, sensual captain. We just want to thank you so much. And of course, our dance parties are donation-based. So if you can. If you can't, don't worry. Because you're welcome here no matter what. And if you can for someone else, maybe. Thank you so much. We love you. We want you to keep being safe. We're going to keep throwing dance parties, keep you moving. So let's rock out these last couple minutes again. We love you so much. And let's dance. We will be back next week. Every Tuesday, we're shaking it for you.
And now these females take on what are usually male roles in the bird world.
This is Bird Note. The dictionary defines anomaly as something difficult to classify, a departure from the rule. If any bird meets that description, it's the Wilson's phalarope. In a bird book, Wilson's phalaropes are found among the sandpipers, and in fact they do have the long, slender sandpiper bill. But instead of probing tide flats, they forage while swimming alongside ducks. They spin like tops on the water. That creates an upwelling, pulling food to the surface, which the birds pick off. The breeding of Wilson's phalaropes is even more unusual. Females are the brightly colored sex, opposite of most birds. And courtship roles are reversed. Females compete for males, sometimes mate with several. And once they lay eggs, leave all parental duties to the males. In summer, Wilson's phalaropes nest in prairie wetlands in the northern half of the western United States and well into Canada. But come winter, they head south, some as far as Argentina. In common with most birds, however, Wilson's phalaropes face conservation challenges, particularly when it comes to the protection of their winter habitat. To learn more about the anomalous phalarope, come to our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
That's our show for this week. Thanks to Tina Rennick for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1616.